Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Swineblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs, and I'm so excited to be here for our seventh season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show, Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO as we call it, and it was one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. In 2018, our beloved improv show became the podcast it is today, hosted and produced by Gay City News. It is an honor and privilege to hold space for the coming out and coming into self stories our guests share. And I am so excited and honored about my guest here with me today. Adit Klein is a national leader for social change with more than 30 years of experience in the nonprofit justice sector. Since 2001, she has served as the leader of Keshet, the national organization for LGBTQ equality and Jewish life. Adit built Keshet from a local organization with an annual budget of $42,000 to a national organization with offices in six states, multi-million dollar budget. Under her leadership, Keshet has mobilized tens of thousands of Jewish leaders to make LGBTQ+ equality a communal value and priority for action. Adit created national community building programs for queer Jewish teens and organized Jewish communities nationwide to join the fight for LGBTQ+ rights. In addition, she served as the executive producer of Keshet's documentary film, Hineni, coming out in a Jewish high school, which inspired the formation of GSAs in Jewish schools around the country. Adit, welcome.
Thank you, Dubs. So happy to be here.
See that you are here. How I know we kind of chit-chatted a little bit before I hit record, but generally speaking, how are you doing?
Yeah, so I feel like I've been answering that question in a bifurcated way for many years. Thank God, being able to be grateful for, my immediate world of my family and dear ones and health and kind of all of the other immediate needs that I'm fortunate to have met. And in a state of alternating, anguish, fury, clawing for hope always regarding the rest of the world. And I was saying to a friend the other day that, it will be a glorious day when we can all answer that simple question, how are you, in, a single unified way.
Yeah, that is so true.
So that's a long answer to that question.
Yeah, no, that's the perfect length. I'm trying to think of like the last time I was able to answer that question, like how you said, like in a unified, like one, no bifurcation. I don't know. Is that a word? And I don't know. I don't know. It's been a long time. Can you pinpoint when the last time you were able to?
I think there were periods during the Obama years when, certainly, there was a lot of work to do, there were moments that felt terrible, but not in the kind of, totalizing, terrorizing way that, they have for many of the years since then.
Yeah. Man, that's so long ago.
How about for you?
The Obama years are so long ago.
I know.
I'm trying to think. I mean, the memory that comes to mind was the day my friends and I called it Yom Biden, which was like that Saturday when they like declared him president. Uh-huh. And it just was like the day felt infinite and it felt like a relief. And I remember crying because I saw Kamala had her pronouns in her Twitter bio. And I was just like, the vice president has her pronouns in her Twitter. And of course, this was before Twitter was a piece of garbage. And
right.
So I think it was just like that day was like, okay, maybe there will be some reprieve and some like ease. And then that lasted for like 5 seconds. But but we gotta take the moments as we get them.
We do.
Yeah. All right, so we all have multiple coming out stories. We have multiple coming into self stories, and I would be honored to hear one of the stories that you'd like to share with us.
So may I actually share two stories? And
Of
if there's not
course.
room later on, you do your thing. Because when I think of my coming out, these are the two stories that I go to. So the first was the first time I kissed a woman, and it wasn't at that point for me about identity. I was just like so crazily deeply in love with this woman, and it was kind of just all about her, and like I couldn't even think about anything else. And I had been in love with her for many years, unbeknownst to me, known to my friends, but I wasn't really. And I just remember the first time we kissed, I mean, it sounds like a cliche to say, but it like really was a revelation. And I just felt like, oh my God, this is what it feels like to kiss someone you're in love with. And I had no idea what that was the beginning of. It turned out to be the beginning of my whole kind of journey into queerness. But it was definitely one of the most glorious moments of my life. And I feel really blessed that it was a this moment of pure joy and profound relief. My other coming out moment, which is more sort of conventionally around coming out, I mean, because it was literally at a National Coming Out Day speak out at my college. And I feel like you can't get more cliched than that. And I don't know, do they still have those? Like a mic in the middle of the green and people go and declare their identity?
I don't know, but I would love to bring it back if it's not. It's
Yeah,
still
that'd be a
happening.
good thing to find out. So it was the fall of my senior year, and this is a good year plus after that first kiss, because as I said, that was sort of the beginning of the journey to identity. And I remember standing with the crowd of 150 or so people who were in front of the very small line of people who were waiting to speak at the mic. And it was probably the distance of 4 steps from me to that line, but that represented everything. Like for me, that represented or and felt like this enormous gulf that I needed to find the courage to cross. And of course I did cross it, and I took those 5 steps and I stepped into that line, and it really felt like I was crossing from one chapter in my life, to another. And before I even said a word, to the 150 or so people who were there, because I did give a short speech, but before I even said a word, just that simple act of stepping into the line said everything.
Wow. I feel like there's so many metaphors in there too. Thank you for sharing those stories. I wanna go back to the first story you shared first, and something that is sticking out to me is you said that you were blessed. It was a moment of pure joy and profound relief. And I wanna just like live in that relief for a second of like just thinking about you didn't even know you were in love, but you had all of these intense feelings, and you have this first kiss that's like life-changing. What about it was a relief to you? Like what did that feel like, and what, yeah.
So I actually did know that I was in love by then.
Oh, okay.
I
Thank you.
did. I mean, it had been many years. It was many. I mean, I met this person when I was a teenager, and we were very close friends. And I did know I was in love by then. The relief, I think, was the relief of suddenly feeling all of those accumulated years of being in love with her. And it had been a few months of me consciously wanting to kiss her, And it had been many years of me unconsciously wanting to, and suddenly feeling it kind of flood through me.
So what happened, like what was the impetus to be like to move from the want to the action?
I mean, it was how we were interacting. It was unspoken messages she was giving me, just sort of our gradually moving closer and closer to one another, both, emotionally and physically, and it becoming apparent to me that it was something that she wanted to.
So what happened after the kiss? Like, meaning, were you in a, did you start a relationship? Did you, were you like, this is like so real, I need to take a step back? Like, what was next?
So that's not such a happy story. She, in the end, I mean, there was something intense and brief, but in the end, she got back together with an ex-boyfriend and totally shattered my heart, and that took a long time for me to recover from. But
Yeah.
I still feel really grateful, because, I still got to have this like amazing first moment of embodied queerness.
Yeah, and I think so many times in our lives can have that both, right? This like, and so I think I've been working really hard on being able to hold the multiple truths of lots of things at the same time.
Yep, so much of life is about those multiple truths.
Yep. So is that part of maybe the reason why it was like a year plus before you took those metaphorical steps? Okay. So,
I mean, it was just all about kind of recovering from that heartbreak and kind of, and then moving to a place that it was, however I felt and defined my queerness was no longer about her, but be could become, my own story.
yeah. I'm interested to know about a Ring of Keys moment for you, and for the listeners who don't know what that is, I'll just briefly explain, which is it's a moment pulled from Fun Home that Alison Bechdel wrote, where basically small Al is in a diner with her dad and a butch lesbian walks in and she feels this like intense sense of like feeling known, seeing herself reflected in someone else, and it's like this like aha moment for her of, oh, like I can be queer too, and like this is what that is. And so I'm curious if you have a Ring of Keys moment you want to share.
I do have a Ring of Keys moment, that is a very sweet memory. It's kind of a it's a quiet moment. So this was the fall of my sophomore year of college, and just to put that in the timeline of what I've shared so far, the first kiss was the summer after my sophomore year of college. So that was sort of the year of moving towards queerness. So it was the fall of my sophomore year. I was riding Metro North from New Haven to New York with my dear friend Judith Rosenbaum, who today is the CEO of the Jewish Women's Archive, which kind of plays a role here. And we were on our way to New York to interview Letty Cotton Pogrebin, one of the founders of Ms. Magazine, for the Jewish Journal at Yale, where we went to school, that we co-edited. So we're on the train and we're just kind of chatting. And Judith starts talking to me about these two childhood friends of hers, Tani and Tamara, who had just come out at Columbia Barnard, and how they had started some kind of queer Jewish, I mean, I don't think we used the word queer then, but they'd started some kind of gay Jewish group on campus. And she just chatting, like, it's just casual conversation. And I just remembered feeling this awakening, stirring recognition. I didn't even say a word to her until years later, but it was just this moment of There was something about what she shared about them that I knew had something to do with me. And it was so, in such an embryonic stage, I couldn't do more than feel that stirring. I couldn't really articulate why, but it was a very powerful story. And I wanted to know them. I wanted to know more about it. I didn't know how to ask. And and of course, the way these things go, Tani ended up being my coworker at my first job in Israel a couple years later, and Tamara became a colleague a bunch of years later in the Jewish community. So I did get to tell them both that story in person, which was very meaningful to share.
Wow, that is meaningful. This is the first Ring of Keys story I've heard where it's like through words instead of like seeing somebody or witnessing a TV show, and that's powerful. And just kind of reaffirms the power of stories and the power of feeling seen from words and from just even in those, like you said, like the quiet moments that we don't know we're impacting people's lives, or it's major.
And of course, back then when I was 19 or whatever I was when I was a sophomore in college, I had no idea that I was going to years later become a professional queer Jew, but it's, certainly kind of lovely and powerful that really where I go when, like, I think my Ring of Keys moment is this, like, story of others who were doing queer Jewish organizing.
Yeah. So in hindsight now, because I know you had said that you were in love with this woman. I'm rewinding a little bit. For years with you didn't know, and then you knew, but your friends knew. So in hindsight, were there other kinds of like moments where you're like, ah, oh, that was like pretty gay of me, or like, do you know what I mean?
A few. I mean, I can think of a couple of friends, girl friends, with whom, in retrospect, I was in love or had crushes, but really didn't have any way to articulate that or any kind of conscious understanding of that at the time. But looking back, I can see that. I was always a very strong ally, which can be a telltale sign.
Yeah.
My best friends in high school were closeted gay guys, and I was their fiercest defender. Which of course, could mean, but didn't necessarily need to mean. But looking back, I think, clearly there was a connection. I also remember this day when there were two friends of mine, one from college and one from high school, who I had kind of set up, and they hooked up, and the three of us went to see a movie in my hometown of New Bedford, Massachusetts. And outside the movie theater, they weren't touching. So this is like 1992 or so. And when we went into the movie theater and sat together, I saw that they started holding hands. And I don't remember the name of the movie, but it was one of those films in which there's this kind of gotcha moment where the man suddenly appears to be a woman, or I don't know, something, there's some sort of transphobic moment in terms of how it's presented. And indeed, when it happened, the whole movie, and in the film, I remember when the man character suddenly appears as a woman, you see that character kiss another woman. And when that happens, the whole movie theater broke out in kind of jeers and calls of gross, da, da, da. And I saw my friends, stop holding hands. And I was so upset by that moment, and so identified with the vulnerability that they felt. And at the time, I viewed that as just, again, me being their friend and their ally. But I think it had to be an unconscious sense that that was about me too.
Yeah. Was it Ace Ventura, Pet Detective?
No, but
There's a,
that
yeah, it, like it. There's like similar vibes in that movie of like
genre.
super transphobic
I actually never
stuff.
saw that film, but my sense is similar genre.
Okay, yeah, and you can skip it. You don't need to watch it
Thank you.
in case you were wondering. Yeah, I'm thinking back, like there was a the movie, did you ever see Boys Don't Cry?
Of course, yeah.
So for those listening, Boys Don't Cry is like a based on a true story of a trans man living in somewhere in the middle of the country. I forget, do you remember which state?
Maybe North Dakota, but I could be making that up. Yeah, somewhere in the
Yeah.
Midwest. Yeah, small
Yeah.
town.
Yeah, super small town, and just like his plight of being a trans man and trying to survive, essentially. And it was incredibly violent and incredibly sad. But there were definitely in that movie also like moments of like, oh, like a trans man can find love. And oh, like this. But I the first time I ever saw it was in high school, where I knew for sure that I was gay, but never told anybody, but also didn't have the language or understanding to know about or to want to be trans because it was so scary for me. And seeing that movie was so intense for me. And it was like, I think this has something to do with me, like similar to like what you were saying, like I think this has something to do with me, but I don't quite have the language to say it. And then was like so deeply disturbed by it and was like crying hysterically when it was over, and my friends were like, "Why are you crying?" And I was like, "Why aren't you crying? Like, what's happening here?" But I just think it's so just powerful how we kind of know for ourselves, like we have these instincts and we know things about ourselves, even if we don't have the language to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like for me, there's something, I mean, both deeply heartening and heartbreaking about, the story you just told and the story that I just told, because it's like we had these moments of this flickering sense, like this is about me, but for myriad, largely external factors, like couldn't see through that yet. And and had
Yeah.
to go through a journey to for some of us a really difficult journey, for others an easier one. But regardless, like, again, I think back to my Ring of Keys moment, and what would have happened if I had said to Judith, "Oh my God, can you connect me with Tanya and Tamara? I want to talk to them." And if I had come out, at Yale and in the Jewish community at Yale, the fall of my sophomore year, not the fall of my senior year. And I was the first Jewish leader on campus to ever come out, and it was a very big deal, and it affected a lot of people. And how many more people's lives, like, could have been affected if that had happened earlier. So so it's like the joy is in these moments coming into our lives, and us having the self-understanding, even if it's so inchoate and we can't articulate it and we can't find the words. We just have this inarticulable feeling. But then there's the heartbreak of being aware of kind of everything that kept us from fully seeing.
Yeah. Amen to everything you just said. And I think another layer for me was I was so deeply involved in my Jewish communities and just didn't see there were maybe like a very small handful of like gay Jewish people, but no trans out trans people. And the gay people that I knew, I think, I don't know, I didn't know much about them, but I know that like our communities like talked not nicely about them. And that really impacted me too, of like, and then when I learned like when I was a kid, that it was only just recently that a woman could like be a rabbi or get a bat mitzvah or, like all of these things. I was like, all of that just like made me really angry. And like having to become a bat mitzvah was really challenging for me, and we had no language to be able to explain why. Which is why I think this is a perfect segue into Keshet. And I remember when I interviewed, so I worked at the organization that you are at right now. I worked there for 5 years, and I remember when I interviewed, I think I mean, I know that I cried through every single interview because it was so profound to me to get to about the opportunity to work in a like very specific queer and Jewish space that celebrated not one or the other, but both identities at the same time. And that was so profound and so life-changing for me that I was like, I need this job more than anything in this world. And I'm grateful that I was able to get it. So, because working at Keshet helped me a lot, like heal a lot of that hurt that I had within the Jewish community, and getting to be among other queer Jews and meet other trans Jews and other trans Jews who've had top surgery and like who's a rabbi for God's sakes, and just so many moments. And so, I want to like pass the mic back to you, which is like, how did you get involved with Keshet, and what was kind of like the beginnings of that, and what did that look like for you? Because you mentioned that you are the first out queer Jewish person on your campus, and
First
then
out
moving
Jewish
from,
leader.
oh, leader, thank you.
That's okay.
And then shortly after graduating, it seems like, because you were young when you started Keshet. I'll just stop rambling. Tell us about the
Okay.
beginnings of Keshet.
Sure. Well, first, and I should have begun with this. It is really like so sweet and lovely to be in conversation with you. Because it's been a bunch of years since you were at Keshet, but of course I very vividly remember your time at Keshet and the powerful work that you did. So thank you for your commitment and contributions during that time, and for having me today. So in terms of Keshet, so when I graduated from college, I moved back to Israel. So I started out my life in Israel, came to the States as a young person, and then I moved back to Israel after within 6 weeks of graduation, got a job doing what I had been dreaming I would do since the age of 16, which was working at a cooperative Israeli-Palestinian peace organization. And stayed in Israel for a few years, became an activist in what was then a really fledgling LGB, eventually LGBT community in Jerusalem. Was involved with those who helped establish the Jerusalem Open House, which is the LGBTQ community center in Jerusalem. So that was my first bunch of years out of college. And then I came back to the States, planning to only be here for a few months because I was in a relationship with someone here. And the plan was, I'll come back, she'll graduate from college, we'll move back to Israel, live happily ever after. And of course, that is not how it went. But then after we broke up, I decided to go to grad school. And long story short, it took me a couple of years to decide not to get my doctorate in English, which is my academic love, got a master's in social justice education. And during that time, met a couple of gay Jewish men in Boston who had started kind of coming together with a small group of other, at that point, gay and lesbian Jews. And, were calling that thing Keshet. And I got involved, and I brought various kind of ideas around community organizing and advocacy to the very fledgling organization that existed. And they were kind of really lovely about letting this person who just showed up kind of apply and implement her ideas. And so for a bunch of years, I was a very dedicated volunteer activist. And what happened is that after a few years, when I got my master's, I got a job leading an environmental justice campaign at a nonprofit, which, on paper was what I should be doing. And I went to work for 6 weeks, and every day I steadily sunk into this despondency and clarity that that was not what I should be doing, and that I needed to try to make something happen from this organization that, called Keshet, which was not much of an organization. And so I quit my job. I called up the then president of the Jewish Federation in Boston. I will never know why he took my call and took a meeting with me, but he did, and I'll always be grateful to him for that. His name is Barry Schrage. And at the meeting, I pitched to him why it was in the Jewish community's interest to invest in Keshet. And he listened to me and he said, "I'll find the money." And
Wow.
I requested what at the time felt like an enormous amount of money, which was $25,000. And he gave it. And that was what enabled me to start working full time as our founding executive director out of a room in my house that looked kind of like where I am right now. And and my first day at Keshet, talk about another dramatic moment. My first day at Keshet was September 10th, 2001, which of course turns out to be a date to remember. So in our early days, there were two dynamics that surprised me. One is that the vast majority of cis straight Jewish community leaders to whom I reached out seeking opportunities for speaking, for training, for various kinds of engagement, looked fully bewildered when I told them what I did for work. And they would say things to me like, "Huh, is that a Jewish organization?" Or they would say, "Gay and lesbian Jews, are there really many of you?" We were just not on the radar screen in any way as people, as a community who were relevant to and a part of the broader Jewish community. Of course, there were exceptions who saw it differently, for sure, but they were, exceptions and a minority. So that was kind of amongst straight Jewish community leaders. Amongst queer Jews, and you may remember this story from your onboarding at Keshet, among queer Jews, I put out the call, "Are you interested in working for change in Jewish life? Are you interested in fostering equality and inclusion in the Jewish community?" And I got lots of, yes, I'd love to meet, I'd love to talk. So I started having a lot of coffee dates with people. And what would happen about 90, 95% of the time is the person sitting opposite me, in about 15 seconds, it would become clear that they had very little interest in being an advocate for change in Jewish life. That really the question was, "Do you have a nice Jewish boy for me? Do you have a nice Jewish girl for me?" Like, that's what people were interested in. And initially, I found this very irritating because, a lot of my friends, when I told them that I was quitting my environmental justice job and going to try to build Keshet into something, they joked with me that I was going to become a gay Jewish matchmaker. So I really didn't want to prove them right because that was not what I had any interest in doing. But thankfully, for the sake of the organization, I was able to, basically get over myself and get over being stuck to my own vision of how the trajectory should go. And I recognized that there was a need that people were expressing because people didn't have a place to go in the Jewish community to find dates, to find friends, to find community. And so I kind of quickly pivoted and developed this theory of change that if we invested in creating opportunities for queer Jews to come together in affirming environments and enabled them to find the connections they were seeking, that people would feel the enfranchisement and entitlement to a better Jewish community that they didn't have. And out of those people would come leaders for change. So that was how I embraced the formation of our first ever committee, which was the committee to plan what became the first ever queer Jewish speed dating event in the country, which happened Erev Christmas 2001.
Wow.
So, and out of that group, and actually out of that, the planning committee for that speed dating night, and I will share there are a couple of people who are still married who met that night. But out of that evening, out of that committee, rather, a number of people emerged as people who became our first educators and trainers.
That's awesome.
So, apologies, very long answer there.
Yeah, no apology necessary. It's I just love hearing stories about people, I don't know, listening to their guts. You were at this job where you said like on paper was what you were supposed to be doing, and really your gut instinct was like, this isn't what I should be doing. And I think it's brave. It was brave of you to like take that leap. And I think I wish more people would listen to their instincts and follow their guts in that way. I think the world would be a much better place. So in your in the last like two plus decades, what surprised you the most in this work of like getting to, you said people were like shocked to hear that there were more than, a small number of queer Jews. Just in general, like how have you, what surprised you the most, if you can think of, if you like, if it's easy to articulate?
Sure. I mean, there were surprises along the way, and then there are surprises in retrospect. So, surprises in retrospect are all about the pace of change. I mean, the fact that in so I've been at Keshet as a staff for 24 years, for a few years longer, including my pre-staff volunteer days. And I mean, when I think about the fact that the most common response we got in the Jewish community when I started building the organization was like, is that Jewish? Like, is that even relevant in any way to what it means to be a Jew? And today, the most common responses I get when I tell people what I do for work is like, oh, like, my JCC really needs you. Like, how can we connect you for a training? Or, my granddaughter is trans, so I'd love to connect her with Keshet. Or, one of my favorites is the very enthusiastic, my son is 25 and gay and so smart. Could I set him up for an interview with you? He's looking for a job. So, we had this very sweet and powerful moment last week. So, I'm actually I will share with your listeners. I'm actually leaving Keshet after 24 years at the end of July. And last week, Keshet had a big gala with 450 plus people, honoring my leadership. And a woman I know who in the community who's a rabbi who's straight looked at me at the event, and the event was at Temple Emmanuel, which is the biggest conservative synagogue in Boston and is a very kind of establishment institution. And she looked at me and she's like, "Wow, think about the journey that we all have traveled, that tonight this is the place for Jewish Boston to be." And it was very true, and not just Jewish Boston. I mean, there were kind of a number of people who traveled from all over the country to be there. So, so when I think about that kind of transformative process, in less than 25 years, which, on an historical timeline, 25 years doesn't even show up, right? Like, I think that's extraordinary. When I think about specific campaigns like the campaign to save marriage equality in Massachusetts, which started in 2004 when marriage equality became legal and continued for 3 years. So there was a 3-year fight to rescind that right. And we went from it being a struggle to find a single rabbi who was willing to publicly stand with us to gradually a few rabbis standing with us to By the close of the campaign, we had hundreds of rabbis who were standing with us. And more broadly beyond the Jewish community, polls show that if a vote, a popular vote had happened in Massachusetts in 2004, we would have lost by a landslide, and marriage equality, which came through a court decision, would have been undone. 2.5 years later, after a campaign in which thousands of us went door to door telling our stories about why marriage equality mattered to us, 2.5 years later, those numbers completely reversed. And if a popular vote had happened, we would have won by a landslide. So I think that is extraordinary. And then what I think is more extraordinary is that, I looked at, my 10-year-old who came to our gala last week with about a third of his fourth grade class, and all of these kids, they're growing up in a world where it would be unimaginable to them that everybody can't marry the person they love. They're growing up in a world where, they all have openly trans people in their lives. Now, I recognize, this is Boston. This is not the case in every community across the country, but this is one place, and it has happened here, and it can happen and will happen elsewhere.
Yeah. Wow. Just thinking about the major shifts, and that's incredible. And the number of people who've worked at Keshet through the last few decades, and all of the like, just thinking about each person's story and the impact that they've had in their like specific roles that they did. And I'm just thinking about my 5 years of going from program associate split between the education team and the youth team, where it was just the directors and me, and then getting to witness, the Ami joining the youth team full time, and then on the education side, like that team with Daniel just like growing one person at a time. So when I left, both teams had like five people on them, each of them, and it just was like an amazing.
And now the education training team has 10 people.
That's incredible. I didn't realize it was that big now. It's amazing that there's all of these that all of the impact that everyone gets to make is incredible. And I know it's changed my life in a million different ways. And knowing that I just like the impact that I've had on people and the impact that you've had on people is spectacular, and it's we need more of that. I was reading a blog post that you wrote, and now I'm forgetting the exact pieces of it, but there was a quote that you gave that someone else said, but then you added, like with joy and love. Do you know what I'm referencing? This is like not great
Was I
reporting of me.
quoting Grace Paley?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So she has this quote that I love. She says, "Let us go forth," something like, "Let us go forth into the world with," it's three words, but with rage is, I'm sorry, I should look it up. I don't remember exactly, but anyway, but it's. Hope and joy are not in the quote. Rage is in the word is in the quote, and I always hold for myself and share with others that yes, we need to go forth with rage, but we also need to go forth with joy and love. And I think, when people ask me, like, how have you, like, what has sustained you for so many years in this work, and it is that, at the heart, I believe, of the LGBTQ liberation movement is joy and love. And it can be hard to stay connected to that. But I've been very grateful at Keshet to, have a staff community that I feel really embodies that. And we help one another remember that that ultimately, like, that is why we are here. I mean, it is what enables us to be here, and that is what we are trying to bring into the world.
Yeah. I looked it up, and it was fear, courage, and rage.
Thank you. I forgot fear and courage.
Yeah, there's a lot of rage feelings right now, so I don't blame you for forgetting. So I want to ask you about Hineini, the documentary, and like how you got connected into that project. When I worked at, I was active in my Hillel at Ohio State, and I did when I came out in college. And when I came out of my Hillel, I became the president of our Jewish Queers and Allies group, and actually did a like showing of Hineini as like an as a program. And I think this is right, and I have to ask my mom, but I think her classmate for sure was Rabbi Steven Greenberg, and I'm pretty sure he came to speak to it. I don't think I would make that up, but maybe I am. I have to ask my mom. Anyways, it was very significant because like there were a lot of people in the room to watch this documentary, and it was, and I didn't realize until way later that it was a Keshet entity, even but when I started working at Keshet. Anyways, tell us about Hineni.
Sure. So this is a documentary film called the full name is Hineni, Coming Out in a Jewish High School. And it actually premiered this coming November 20 years ago, which
Wow.
is really hard to believe. And the way it came about is several years before the film premiered, Shulamit Eisen, who is the main character in the film, who was then a sophomore at her Jewish high school, showed up at a Keshet members meeting. And back then we were a local Boston organization, and so we had members meetings. And she came up to me and she said, "Can I intern with you? I want to learn community organizing so I can change the Jewish community." And so she interned with us. And I mean, there wasn't a big us, but there were a few of us. And the first thing we did was say, "Okay, what part of the Jewish community do you want to change? Where do you feel like you have the most influence?" And we sat down with her and we did a power map, which is shown in the film, of her school, because she identified her school as where she wanted to see change happen. Because not that long beforehand, Massachusetts had passed a law that any student in a public school who wanted to form what we then called gay straight alliances, so any student who wanted to form a gay straight alliance needed to be supported. But her school, as a Jewish school, was exempt from that law. And of course, she thought that was outrageous, as did we. And so we supported her throughout what became a very intense year-long campaign to organize others at the school. And it started out just her. She's a lone voice and the only out person in her entire school. Eventually, other kids came out. Eventually, several teachers out of a very small faculty also came out, including the head of the Bible department. So her campaign had a really transformative impact on the school, which culminated in the administration saying, "Yes, you can have a gay straight alliance, even though you can't call it that. You have to call it something that's a bit more closeted." And eventually it became a gay straight alliance. So that all happened. And then very poignantly, in the midst of the campaign, I invited Shulamit to speak at a Keshet house party, like a fundraising evening. And there was a man there, and he was closeted. And he was actually our first major donor, and he was really moved by her story. And he said to me, "I'm never going to be able to be out there the way she is, but I can help you amplify her voice." He said, "I want to give you $5,000 to produce, a 5-minute video about her story." So I said, "Wonderful." And so we started working, and as I started working with the volunteer film director Irina Feingold, who I recruited to work on the project, it started to become clear that this really needed to be more than a 5-minute video, that there were so many voices we wanted to include, so many powerful stories. So then we said, "Okay, it's going to be a half hour film. Okay, it'll be a 40-minute film." So eventually became a full-length documentary film, which took 3 years to make. And so I often say it's probably the closest I'll ever get to a dissertation in terms of the amount of time I worked on it. And and when it premiered to sold out audiences at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. And then we immediately were bombarded with requests for film screenings from all over the country. It sounds like from Ohio State as well. And that was what really kind of ignited the GSA movement at Jewish schools nationally. And for Keshet, that was what catapulted us into the national arena and led us to decide to become a national organization.
Wow. And had you had any like previous experience working in film?
No. I always loved
So it was just
film.
one of those like,
I mean,
yeah.
I wasn't the director or the editor. I mean, I did play a very hands-on role and learned a lot about directing and editing. But no, I mean, I brought in people who actually had expertise in those matters. But no, I didn't. I mean, I had experience as a storyteller, but no, not as a filmmaker.
Yeah, that's really cool that you were just like, yeah, let's do it. Like, and then figured out how to make it happen. That's really great. Are do people still engage with the film?
People do, and it's interesting, today, to see particularly the way high school students respond to it because, it is a dated film. I mean, like for instance, there's, gay and lesbian identity, maybe bi identity are what are discussed in the film. There's no attention to trans identity. There's no one who's out as trans in the school at the time. Obviously, if we made a film today, that would be very different. And for some, the level of resistance from the administration is surprising to see. For others, it's not. I mean, there's still, we have come a very long way, and there are still, sadly, plenty of schools where, kids and teachers encounter resistance from the administration. And the same fears that that school had around, well, if we let this happen, we're going to become known as the gay school. We continue to see that at Keshet in how some administrators of Jewish educational institutions respond today.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in my time there, I was there from 2017 to the end of 2021, and I remember some of the like I don't know if I would call it pushback, but concerns that people had, quote unquote, were we don't want to be the gay synagogue, like we don't want to have, and it's just interesting, like even 15 years later, I can't do math, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. X number of years later, that people are still having that fear as if it's a bad thing, or if it's that's what it would be.
Absolutely. And
That's
today,
why.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. No, and today, in addition to those being voices that we hear, we also hear voices that express opposition from a politicized place. I mean, we actually first saw this in the previous Trump administration when within a very short time of the election, before he had even taken office, we heard from a number of Jewish educators that their senior rabbi, their head of day school, et cetera, had asked them to take down their LGBTQ Jewish safe zone sticker from their office door, for fear of upsetting some of the Trump supporters, on their board or out of a concern that it was political. So that was back in 2016. I mean, today, all of that is exacerbated even more. And, we're definitely getting pushback around some of our attempts to do education and training around trans and gender identity issues and the trans experience. At the same time, I will share that the good news is, so again, something that has changed at Keshet from your time is that we now have a Department of Community Mobilization that mobilizes Jews to fight for LGBTQ rights in the broader world. And we are seeing the numbers of Jews who are standing up and wanting to fight back against all of the anti-LGBTQ assaults, but of course they're majority assaults on trans and non-binary people. We have so many Jewish community leaders and Jewish community members who see it as an intrinsic part of who they are as Jews to take a stand and to fight. And that's, part of the reason why, we were a part of a coalition that helped defeat every anti-LGBTQ plus proposed law in Florida in the past legislative session. I mean, we definitely didn't do it on our own. We were part of a coalition, but I believe that the thousands and thousands of Jews we mobilized in Florida, to say, this does not represent who we are as Jews, and we are here today, not despite our commitment to Judaism and not despite our Jewish tradition, but because of it. And our experience is that many lawmakers, even though the vast, vast majority of them, are right-wing Christians, they, maybe I even shouldn't say this publicly, but it's kind of surprising to me still after all these years that they respond to Jews as, people of faith whose voices therefore matter.
That's the community mobilization team did exist when I was at Keshet.
Oh, okay.
But I'm glad to hear that it's still going strong.
And has grown.
What, yeah, yeah. What kind of went into your decision to leave Keshet after all these years, and what's next?
I don't have a dramatic story to share regarding my leaving. Of course, over the years, once I got past, year 10, 12, 15 or so, I would wonder from time to time, when will be the right time for me to go, and would do a lot of checking in with myself and checking in with my staff and board, that I, continue to be engaged, that I feel inspired, that others feel inspired by me. Because I, the last thing I would ever want would be to, be one of those leaders who kind of everyone is waiting for them to go. So,
Yeah.
so I thought about it over the years, and just again, like I said, would kind of check in with myself and with others around me, to make sure, like, this is where I want to be. I'm still being effective. I'm still making a difference. And then, last early summer, I was re literally just I was walking up the stairs in my house on a Sunday, thinking about how much laundry there was to fold on our guest room bed. And I was thinking, like, oh, I wonder if Jordan, my wife, will end up folding it, so I don't need to, or do I need to fold it? And then out of nowhere, I just felt, heard myself, this inner voice say, it's time. And I just knew it's time. In Judaism, there's the concept of the kol dmama daka, which is the still small voice, and it which is like your deepest true voice. And I feel like it was my kol dmama daka, just saying, like, for no reason that I could articulate exactly, except kind of all of the reasons, it was time. It was time for my next chapter, time for Keshet's next leadership chapter. So, and then I kind of held on to that thought, and sh shared it only with people very close to me for a few months, because I wanted to make sure that it stuck. And it did. And so then, in the fall of 24, I started sharing the news with my board and senior staff and the rest of the staff, and then, shared the news publicly in October. So I don't know if that is a why, that is a how I came to decide that it's time. In terms of what's next, I'm planning to take a break after I leave before my next commitment. I'm exploring a number of different opportunities. I haven't made a commitment yet, so I'm in the process of having conversations. One sphere that I'm exploring very seriously is within the sphere of organizations that are working for a more just Israel. So those are conversations I'm having. We will see. That is definitely n news to be announced, including to me.
Yeah, got it. I think it's just profound. Can you say the Hebrew again for the
Sure,
voice that you?
sure. Called Mamadaka.
Okay. That it just it feels like it's a profound like callback to what we were talking about earlier of like knowing our knowing of like the flicker of queerness or the flicker of like seeing ourselves and just like really trusting our instincts and like who knows where these moments of clarity come from, but we have to be, ready, willing, and able to hear them and embrace them. And so mazel tov to you on listening to your inner voice that now I can't remember the Hebrew you just said, even though you've said it like 5 times now.
I'll send it to
But that's yes, please do. It's really exciting. And do you have plans for the break between gigs? Gig is a weird way to say it. 24 years is not a gig, but
So August is a bunch of travel with my family. We're going to go to Curaçao, which has the requisite beaches and hiking that that I wanted. It also has the oldest synagogue in the Western Hemisphere, which has a sand floor, which is very neat. And so that feels kind of fitting for there to be sort of a meaningful Jewish component to the trip. And then comically, my wife discovered the other night that there is a tiny island off the coast of Curaçao called Klein Curaçao.
ah,
Isn't that hilarious? So,
that's
yeah. And we will
hilarious. Are you
make a
gonna
day
go?
trip to Klein Curaçao.
Yeah, you'd be like, this is my island, everybody.
Right. Yeah.
No, that's exciting.
So, and then I'd like to do, I've got, these DVDs that I've been wanting to digitize forever of interviews with my grandparents and other Holocaust survivors in my family, and footage that I shot from a trip back to Transylvania where my parents were born after the war with my grandmother. So, and it's the kind of thing that I've been kind of planning on doing something with all of that with all of those family stories, and so this feels like a good time to do
Yeah, and you have all this documentary experience from
it.
Hineni.
Right.
So any before I move us into our last segment, which is a lightning round of questions, is there anything else that you want to share about your time at Keshet on your heart? Just any like just want to give the space if there's any other anything you want to share.
Sure. I mean, only in that, as I've been in this season for the last few months of kind of being able to reflect on the past 24 years, I feel so I feel so struck, as I was saying before, by the dramatic change that has happened. And I feel like, back to holding multiple truths, yes, we can be aware and be anguished and be furious at the ways that our rights are being attacked today and the ways that we are being vilified and scapegoated, in public discourse and rhetoric today, and that is true. And what is also true is that, some change has proceeded at an accelerated pace beyond all of our imaginings. And so for me, that is a source of such deep hope. And I deeply want that, for all of my, beloveds, in the LGBTQ world, because these times are so painful. And, back to Grace Paley, the way to get through, I believe, is not only through fear and courage and rage. You need all of those things, but you also need joy and hope and love, because ultimately, those are the most deeply animating impulses in the world.
Yeah. Amen to that. Okay, hate to do this, but have to move us into our last segment, which is a lightning round of questions. It'd be fun, lighthearted. I did get feedback a few seasons ago that they were too binary, so they are now open-ended. So it may maybe a little bit harder to answer, but feel free to take your time, but also do it quickly. Also pass if you don't want to answer.
I love that. Take
And
your time, but do it quickly.
and then there is one either or question that I couldn't get rid of. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. Where is your favorite place to think?
The shower.
Who is an influential queer person in your life?
Urvashi Vaid, Zichrona Levracha.
All right. What is a song that you can listen to on repeat forever?
Don't Stop Believin', the Glee version.
I somehow knew you were going to say a Glee song.
I
What's one thing you want to be known for?
heart.
What does identity euphoria feel like to you?
What a beautiful question. Identity euphoria. At Keshet, the queer youth talk about queer Jewish euphoria. But
Amazing.
identity euphoria is the biggest exhale in a space in which you get to not think about who you are.
Absolutely. Where do you find joy?
With the people I love.
Okay, last question. Bagels or donuts?
I'm not passionate about either, which maybe is the best way to respond to a binary question. But if I had to
Yeah.
choose, I would, if I had to choose, I would say bagels for sure, because I always pick savory over sweet.
Yeah, there are no right or wrong answers, but bagels is the right answer. So, congrats. Adit, thank you so much for making the time to chat and to share, and for all of the work that you've done in the last many decades to further queer Jewish rights and visibility and help create the space for people like me to exist and thrive. So thank you so much, and thank you for coming out.
Thank you so much for giving me a space to explore and feel joy again about coming out.
Anytime.
Thank you for coming out.